Hello and welcome to the Deep Dive Perspective. In the studio with me today, I have Tony Gosling, who is an investigator, an old school journalist investigator in the real sense of the word. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And no stranger to Deep Dive, John Wedger, whistleblower extraordinary and ex-detective inspector in the Metropolitan Police. Last time that we met, John talked extensively about protecting children and the abuse of children. But today's topic, I want to go at this notion of a world of cults, spiritual cults, and the abuse that goes on with that, the cover-ups, and a lot of the kind of mainstream media's failure to actually follow through and try to get to the bottom of this. And indeed, where is the police on all these matters? Because the notion of witchcraft, the notions of sacrifices, human sacrifices, some even say, certainly abductions and abuse of other kinds, does seem to be evidence, although it's for you guys to educate us a little bit more. But let's kick off with this whole business of these kinds of cults and the kind of thing that's happening on the ground, not only in your period as a police officer, but subsequently in your investigation on a personal basis.
I mean, in the police, ritual abuse did come in. I deal with it more so now, and I'm actually dealing with an active case at the moment, and it is very interesting. So in the police, it was mainly from ethnic groups. So we got abuse that went on with a form of voodoo from the Jamaican community called Obia. Mm-hmm. There was one, the area I was working was an impoverished part of North and East London. There was a lot of Congolese had been sent there. A lot came from the DRC, and there was a witchcraft called Kindoko, and there was quite a bit of abuse went on there. A unit I was on the Marine unit. They retrieved the body of the torso in the Thames, what they called Adam, the little, which I believe, again, was a mooty killing. But when it comes to, like, the indigenous satanic ritual abuse, which is something, I don't know, maybe I'm an unofficial expert on it, who knows, but I started interviewing people on a project I was called Voice for the Voiceless, and where I'd used my interview skills as a child abuse investigator to speak to survivors of abuse, care home abuse, and why they ended up in crime. And it was the same pattern. They come from abandonment and rejection from the family home, 80% of the abuse in the home, go into the care system, were abused there, but also some of these were ecclesiastical industrial schools that were run post-war, and the sexual abuse then led to a lot of anger, hatred towards society and the establishment, and then they went into criminality, and it was very much a similar pattern. But 1 in 10 would talk about something called SRA, Satanic Ritual Abuse, and the survivors of this were different because many suffered from a condition called DID, which is dissociated identity disorder, multiple personalities. And when you started talking to them, the uniformity of what they were saying, it was incredulous, but it was there, right? And it would be that they were children of Satanists, intergenerational. They would be taken to a venue, and it was usually a church, an ecclesiastical setting. But when you looked at the churches, they were old, they were ancient churches, right? So they were going back to maybe the 7th century onwards. And when you looked at this, right, so it was Pope Gregory in 1601, he turned around and said, right, we're going to stop people worshipping demons, because the UK was very pagan at the time. And he said, but we're not going to abolish their place of worship, we're going to convert them.
I see.
So he said, you're going to worship, from worshipping the devils, you're going to worship the God. And he took over their places of worship, which were these pagan centres, and they were Neolithic and Megalithic burial sites. So these were the giants of the Old Testament. And there was a power and an energy in these mounds that were on the hills. This is why you find these churches on these hills. And they were built on old pagan grounds. Mm-hmm. And William the Conqueror, when he came over in the 11th century, he did the same. He started taking over these places and building Norman churches. So you found that they were on there. And these kids would be taken into these rituals. They would be made to perform the sacrifice, and the sacrifice would always be on a baby. So I must have spoke to at least 20 survivors who say the same. Men in black, the high priest will be in white, hooded cloaks on. There will be an altar. If it's a church, it's a church altar. If not, it is a stone slab. And there'll be a cover over a wriggling item, which when it's revealed is a baby. They'll get the child, who will be beyond the age of criminal responsibility. So they're usually under the age of 9 years old. And they will be given a knife, usually a hooked dagger. And they'll be made to cut the baby's throat, slice the baby down and remove the heart. Once that is done, the heart is then either bitten or it's punctured. And then an orgy takes place. So the child will usually be buggered or raped. Sometimes it's bestiality, but they're smothering blood. The body of the baby is consumed. And there is this sex orgy. But each ritual will be dedicated to a demonic figure. So, for instance, it could be someone who wants wealth. So they might then worship the god Asmodeus. If they want fame and fortune, it'll be Leviathan. And when you look at the African indigenous cultures, such as voodoo and juju, they worship the similar gods, but they're given different names. So Leviathan, which is the serpent, in juju will be the mammy water. And there'll be a name in the Oshin in Santeria for it. Again, it'll be the water god. And they'll all have their own principalities, but there's nine gods as such, nine principalities, but they're all the same across the world. There's a uniformity in it. And it's always for profit and for gain.
Well, that's shocking, horrific, and it's the first time I'm going into it in detail. I've heard hints of it. I'm aware, Tony, that occultism and the New Ageism that has generally been pushed even on the net, and then, of course, the dark net, which I'm not so familiar with. But it seems that this phenomena is definitely growing. I mean, in the old, in the mainstream news, a lot of this would be dubbed conspiracy theory. But John's talking about eyewitnesses, which I'll go back with him to discuss who these people are who are giving this evidence. What do your investigations reveal around occultism and this kind of human sacrifice business and this trend towards something other than Christianity as the bedrock of British society?
Well, okay, so I think the way to look at it is, let's look at whereabouts this sort of thing John's been describing appears in British culture. Actually, it's there. Mm. People have been writing about this sort of thing for quite a while. Mm. And then, but maybe before that, to just look at its origins. Because if you go back, you know, to the time of the Phoenicians, who were essentially the sea people of the Egyptian pharaohs, they were sailing around. Many people believe they had no trouble. In fact, Philip Beale has built a Phoenician galley, and he sailed over to America in it. Got virtually no publicity. There was an article in the Daily Telegraph, I think. And he wanted to prove how easy it would have been for the Phoenicians to sail one of their galleys over to America. There is evidence of the Phoenicians over there. And, of course, there was pyramids built in South America particularly. But the Phoenicians were child sacrifice practicing, along with the Canaanites before them. And, of course, if you look at that empire that they'd created around Carthage and Carthaginians, there was a massive battle that took place in the Roman period, between the Roman Empire and Carthage, over this issue. This is how they motivated the Roman soldiers in the Punic Wars to beat the Carthaginians, was because the Carthaginians were head choppers, child sacrificers. So this is not something new. It's been going on for thousands and thousands of years, but I think it's been bubbling under the surface. And if I can point out just a few of the best, I think, people who've talked about this tradition that's been going on across Western Europe, under the surface for centuries. I mean, one book I read recently, it's called Witchwood by John Buchan, a fantastic novelist. But he calls it his favourite ever novel. And it talks about a isolated Scottish town, village, which gets completely taken over by witchcraft coven, and those individuals who are supposed to be safeguarding everyone from the church, oh, it turns out they're some of the top people in the coven.
Of course.
So that's one. I mean, if people are interested in reading about this from a more anthropological point of view, you won't find anyone, I don't think, better than Margaret Murray. Margaret Murray lived for 100 years. She died, I think, around about 1963. But she wrote two really important anthropological studies. One was The Witch Cult in Western Europe, and that, I think, was 1920s, maybe. And then about 10 years after that, she wrote The God of the Witches, which looks at the practice of witchcraft, not demonising it, but just simply looking at the way that people had come together over the centuries. They'd been actually looked after by the Catholic Church, which is why when it came to the Reformation in Britain, suddenly everyone was saying, well, if you're going to get rid of the Catholic Church, now it's time to go for the witches. So there were a lot of witch trials, and I think many of them were genuine. Obviously, there was a corruption there. You could point the finger, and now we call it witch hunt, don't we? People go after people like Jeremy Corbyn, for example, it's a witch hunt. When people go after Tony Greenstein, who had joined the Green Party, there's a witch hunt for people who are pro-Palestinian within the left wing. So this is something which is, I think, very, very much there. One of my favourite writers is Dennis Wheatley. Not only is he a fantastic writer of historical novels, but he was also a major figure in the Second World War in planning the invasion of D-Day, because he was a deception planner, what we'd now call a psychological warfare officer, and he managed to convince the Nazis, if you want to talk about witchcraft, the SS was a very powerful cult based at Wevelsburg Castle. One of the things he managed to do was completely trick the Nazis that we were coming across over in Calais to such an extent that they left something like 15 divisions for days and days, thinking that the D-Day Normandy attack was just a feint and that everyone was coming over there. So he was very successful in World War II, but he was also a terrific occult novelist. He took out to dinner people like Aleister Crowley to pump him for plots for his novels. Another one is Sax Rohmer, who wrote the Fu Manchu novels. He was a member of the Golden Dawn, but I don't think Sax Rohmer was really interested in Crowley's Golden Dawn for his career prospects. He just wanted, again, to pump them for plots for his novels.
Well, Christopher Lee talks about it and said that this stuff's real.
Well, how do they manage to keep these secret societies secret in an age when communication is so clear, intelligence services are there?
Right.
What's the game?
It's a conspiracy of silence. From what I've heard, and I'm on about the child sacrifice stuff, there's no spectators in this sport. You're there, you drink the blood. The blood gets passed round, so everyone's in on it. So it's the ultimate in blackmail. Like paedophilia, we've all done it. That's their thing, not me. I'm saying it.
Yeah.
You know, so anyone says anything, you're all coming down. And this is what we saw with Dolphin Square and Elm Guest House. It was the ultimate in blackmail. Years ago, you could silence someone because there was an adulterer. Now they're seen as a player. A homosexual could be silenced. Now it's the opposite. You'll get promoted for that. Cocaine usage. Well, how many MPs have done? You've been caught doing that, and still it doesn't matter, you know. But paedophilia, there is not one community on this planet that allows for it. Not one. Even when they go into the Amazon and Papua New Guinea, they find that anyone who commits paedophilia there is banished from the village. So no one accepts it, and it's got the ultimate in blackmail value. You can. There's a mind control element to this. So the survivors of children, they're tortured. They're electrocuted, maybe. They're drowned. Drowning seems to be a big thing. Drowning them. Beatings. They're scared. They end up with a split personality, right? They're alters, and the alters will break down on each other. So it's someone's alter ego, someone's other self that comes into play to help them survive the horrors of what they do. So there'll be an altar that will be there for electrocution. So when they're electrocuting the child, I hear this a lot, this part of that child will form this person who can deal with it. But that, because it's a child's mind that's done it, they'll have childish names. So the alters will be called Sparky or Drippy for Walter. They're very childish names. Mm. they'll stay with them throughout their adult life, and they'll be loyal to the cult. And that is a mind control element of it, the MK Ultra, this thing we've heard about.
Yes.
So you can brainwash someone not to talk, but there's a little caveat there, and this is how we get a lot of information. It's massively open to interpretation. You can't brainwash someone not to draw. So there's been some fantastic artists that have come from ritual abuse who've drawn their abuse. They've drawn maps. They've drawn the churches. One artist in particular is so good at what she does, it's almost like a photograph of some of her work. Wow. And she allowed me access to her work, and we actually located a grave where a child was put in, a freshly dug grave waiting for a burial. A sacrifice was done in there, and the child's body was there, and a coffin was bottom top.
This was found.
We found it, because her artwork was that good, and we found that over in Gloucestershire. So that's one way you do it. And then, of course, they get the child to take part in the sacrifice. Yeah. So you've got that conspiracy of silence. I'm a murderer. They'll get the children sometimes to coerce other people into it. I've heard of prostitutes being paid £2,000 to get pregnant by their punters without condoms, street prostitutes, and they're taken to a clinic in West Brompton in London. This information comes from a Section 9 witness statement, and it was a crack dealer that was getting paid to get the women to get pregnant for the trade in the babies. Homeless people are used, drug addicts are used, but the value is in the blood, because there's no blood in hell, but the value's in the blood, but it's all about the creation, right, and destroying the creation. And the ultimate creation is that of a child, because it's the perfection of God himself, mm-hmm. right? So we hear this term. Well, I'll give you another way. There's a term we don't hear. We don't hear anti-Muhammad. We don't hear anti-Krishna. We don't hear anti-Buddha. We hear the term anti-Christ. Right. It's an attack on Christianity, a lot of this, you know? Mm. So a lot of these rituals are to take down a Christian element. Now, I interviewed a guy 3 years ago, a survivor of ritual abuse. He was involved in Satanism up until his late teens. And he said to me, you've got to look at something. It's the book of Isaiah in the Old Testament. And in Isaiah, the devil exalts himself, right? And it says about the morning star, you have fallen from grace from heaven. And there's five wills. They're called the five I wills. And the devil proclaims, I will rise above the clouds. I will exalt myself above the throne. I will something else. But the last one is, I will be like the Most High. That is used in Satanism. They actually venerate that. They worship that. And the I wills, I was told, are based at 13-year intervals. So a kid is born into trauma. So when a child is born, sometimes they induce a birth to get it on a certain date. Dates are very important to them. When the child is born, I was told that something might be inserted into the child's rectum to cause pain. There might be something goes on with the mother. So the child is born into pain and experiences sadistic sexual pain to start with. They go through all the usual satanic indoctrination, but at the age of 13, they have to attend their first I will ceremony. And that's when a sacrifice is made, but they are made to take part in it out of their own free will to do this. Then they can go on with normal life. A guy said, I could go back to school, I could go to church, no problem. But then 13 years later, my second I will was coming up. And it's on these increments. So he's now 26 years old. He said, John, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be part of this anymore. It was wrong. I could not face the sacrifice of a child. I couldn't do it. And they're told, if you don't attend, you don't turn up, then you're cursed, you're finished. The next year, you're done. And the next year, there might be a suicide, there might be a drug overdose. But what age does that make them? The year after the second I will? 27.
And the significance of number 27?
The 27 Club. Okay. That we hear Janis Joplin, Amy Winehouse, Jim Morrison, all died at the age of 27.
Right.
And this guy, what he said to me was, that's where they've come from. And they've actually refused to do their I will, and you watch them go downhill very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and that, so that's what was said to me. So that's when you get it in popular culture. And the other thing is, when someone wants help, and maybe they'll go to the church, they can't go to the church because these things take place in churches. One victim told me that when a ritual was going on, they got a baby lamb and they cut it open over her, as a live lamb, screaming little baby lamb, cut it open. They told her that's the Lamb of God.
Oh. So would you say that's part of the network of the Church of England, for instance? Because I imagine all churches are largely Church of England here, or they're Roman Catholic.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's split, isn't it? But we're looking at these old churches on these old pagan lines.
So they're not really controlled centrally. They might be independent.
There's an element within them.
Okay, so if I can chip in here, Freemasonry, look at, this is another cult, and they have been very active within the Church of England. I would say most clergy in the Church of England now have come through this method, but do understand the way that Freemasonry in character has changed a lot over the last decade, probably century particularly, but there were two very different sorts of Freemasonry for hundreds of years. That is to say, in Europe, they had Grand Orient Masonry, which is the atheist form of Freemasonry, sometimes militant, sometimes more benevolent, in order to bring people in. And in England, we had United Grand Lodge, which claims to be the very first in the 1700s. Of course, it was going for a long time before that. That's when it came into the open in the 1700s in London. But Freemasonry is Christian in character in England, was for a long time. But I know a guy who was a Christian master of a lodge who in the early 2000s was forced out of his lodge by people who wanted to take it over because this character of Freemasonry was being removed. And, of course, you can do that with cults. So if you've got a lodge or a coven, whoever is the master of the coven gives it its character. And if it was a Christian person, benevolent and kind, maybe at the start, if you replace that with someone else who's not the character of, it changes. So to me, this is where you're looking at the church. There was a big battle, I think it was in the late 1990s, in the Church of England to ban Freemasonry, but they lost. And in fact, a similar thing has happened within the police.
Police, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where people recognise that this is a secret society and that those individuals have sworn their allegiance to the cult. And as part of swearing their allegiance to the cult, they can't possibly be serving the public. Every time they're speaking to a member of the public, whether it's clergy or police or anybody else, they're actually...
What's interesting there, Tony, you said in the 1990s, with the police, they brought round a form for us to fill out, are we a Freemason?
Yeah.
And we had a senior police constable on our team who was a Freemason, went round and said, everyone, give me your forms, I'll deal with them. And he filled them out...
So you basically peeled what he wanted to.
Yeah, so but the character of Freemasonry, you're swearing a blood oath as you go in to Freemasonry at the third degree. It's a very complex ritual based around the rebuilding of Solomon's Temple. The only trouble is the Hiram Abiff, who's supposed to have rebuilt Solomon's Temple, he wasn't Jewish. He was from Tyre. He was actually a pagan. And so they're really, really, you know, sort of bigging up this guy. So this, I think, is quite clear. It's an organisation which has had for many years the outer look of something Christian, but actually it's a cult. And that cult can be controlled and changed over the centuries and over the years. So we've seen that in the Church of England. So it's changed in character.
So here we're talking about a couple of different strands, and there's probably many more. What, John, you were talking about was bottom-up cults, secret little covens that almost breed their own kids and then sacrifice them. So it's like an incestuous inbuilt.
It's intergenerational.
Intergenerational. So they can keep their secret by keeping it in-house. You're talking about recruitment, basically, with a cult like the Masons. That's recruiting outsiders, and they've got their own mechanism of control. Are they the same kind of thing? Do they also have ritual sort of bloodletting and abuse of that kind?
No, I don't think the Freemasons do.
No, they're not.
Not so far as I know. But if you think about it, What we've got here is a similar system for these different types of cults, where you have usually a group of 13. Mm. I mean, this is a mockery of Christ and the disciples, with their own leader. And in fact, in one of Margaret Murray's books, she talks about the devil. And in that area, wherever, I mean, she's talking, I think, about somewhere in Scotland, the devil, the local devil, is the master of the coven.
Mm.
And everyone talks about him as the devil, and they did in medieval times. Talk about these people like that. So that's where these terms come from. They're in our culture.
And they are projected quite freely on mainstream media in many ways. I've seen some of the, for instance, the Olympics in Paris strikes me as a massive demonstration of symbolism from New Ageist culture and old satanic culture. So some of it is very public. And then I have to bring in the likes of Jimmy Savile and, you know, even Jeffrey Epstein, whilst they were like very big, you know, high profile cases. Is there a link to this kind of ritual, you know, abuse?
Well, paedophilia is practiced within the ritual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard of films being made where the kids are filmed. So it's another strand of funding, the child pornography element of it all. if you take, for example, someone like Fred West. Fred West and his wife, Rose West.
Bristol, weren't they?
Yeah,
they
Bristol Way. But he moved about. He came to notice in a town called Coatbridge in Scotland. And there was a well-known murder up there of a girl called Moira Anderson who went missing. And it was a group of paedophiles, believed to be Freemasonic paedophiles, to do with a bus driver who was meant to have abducted the girl for this group to abuse, and then they murdered her. And they were, apparently there was Freemasons, police officers involved, and they were involved in dirty films, everything else. But Fred West was in Coatbridge living at the time and came to notice for attempted abductions on children.
Mm.
There's up to 30 missing people that have got connections to Fred West. He had strong connections to the police. He ran his own little unofficial pub where we'd let the local detectives come in there, drink and have sex with his wife. When they raided his house, 990 videotapes were seized, all believed to be pornography or maybe even child pornography and maybe snuff films. Not one of them was ever evidentially viewed. And when Fred was on remand, there's question marks, did he hang himself or was he murdered? The algorithm is no different to that of Jeffrey Epstein. It's exactly the same algorithm.
Mm.
And around it is this conspiracy of silence because they are feeding children into this perverted machine. When you look at child abuse, when I speak to the survivors of the care homes, they usually came from the lower and the working classes and how child abuse has affected their lives, you know, and forever will do. I got approached by a group called Seen and Heard, and they were all public school boys. Have you come across them?
I've heard the name Seen and Heard,
They all went to Eton, Marlborough, Radley, Winchester, Ambleforth, these real elite fee-paying schools. And one of the group is Charles Spencer. Lady Diana's brother. When you sit down with these guys, because they said, John, you're always talking about the kids that went to these care homes. What about us that went to these elite ones?
Mm-hmm.
And they went through exactly the same.
Public schools.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, that I can.
The beatings, the buggery. And when you look, there's a book called The Poisoned Bowl. It's now one of these banned publications. And it looked at the comparisons between these schools, these elite schools with the beatings, the buggery, the fagging system, and the Greco-Roman gladiator schools, it's the same algorithm. They were building men for the empire that were heartless, cold, and dysfunctional. These are emotionally broken people that are running our country.
Right.
And some take it further, and then they get that lust for it, and then that will be quite an easy feeder into Satanism. And that's when you get the real conspiracy of silence, because that is a blood ritual.
So there could be a network that then protects the lower, not aristocratic, you know, abusers.
Yeah. Well, no one looks into it. What we should be doing, we should have aggravating factors. So when a child is sexually abused in a satanic ritual, or there is a murder in a satanic ritual, it shouldn't be, as it has done in the past with people like Colin Batley with the Kidwelly case, treated it as if it was rape of a child. No, it's an aggravating factor of satanic ritual abuse, rape of a child. We have it with racially motivated crime. We have it with homophobic. Right? Why do we not have it for there? We are so far behind, side other countries, right? You've got the NYPD having a cult crimes unit, which is actually funded by the Vatican. They made a film about it called Deliver Us From Evil. It's a really good film about their work.
But we don't have an occult unit or something like
Italy has one. Saudi Arabia has one. South Africa has the most successful murder investigation unit, which is an occult crimes one. We have nothing.
Yeah, the Singaporeans also have got a whole floor of their police department devoted to secret societies, because they're used in that part of the world to be dealing with triads. Right. But they understand exactly what a Freemason is. If anyone has ever seen that, that Michael Caine, the man who would be king, I think, isn't it called?
Yes.
You can see where these people, they meet up right out in the middle of nowhere, but they've got the same secret signs.
Right.
Oh, right, you're one of us. And this is going right across the world, completely across cultures. So these secret symbols that are used by Freemasons are used by other occult groups right across the world, which is why I see it as Freemasonry is only one aspect. You've got all sorts of different cults, and the way it's organized is very hierarchical. So the master of one cult or one lodge will be part of another lodge, a higher lodge, and then the master of that lodge will be part of a higher lodge. And those are the only people that know what any of the other lodges are doing. So they keep all of these activities completely separate. And, of course, it's only the people at the very top lodge. Now, I'm not quite sure who they are, but I would imagine they're not too far away from royalty, aristocracy. These are the sorts of people we're talking about here.
Well,
they are the ones that are sending the orders and the messages down. So this is essentially a fascistic system where people are just under control. There may be an illusion of democracy, like today, apparently we're changing prime ministers, but actually the people who are really in charge, well, they've just decided to change the horses on the carriage, and the next bunch of horses will take the carriage in exactly the same direction.
Sure. Now, you mentioned before the show a Belfast case in which MI5 were aware and moved in on, but there's been a bit of a cover-up. Tell us about the Belfast story.
So throughout the 70s, they call them the five missing boys of Belfast, and they were linked to a kid's home called Kinkora, which was a Protestant, you know, because you've got a sectarian situation, or did have, going on there. And four of the five boys were residents of this kid's home, and one wasn't, and they went missing. Four of them were never seen again, and they believed that they were murdered in some Protestant paedophilic ring, which the British government knew all about. There was another one going on with a Catholic care home called Kirkcorbyn. I've spoken to survivors of that, very, very similar. But one of the kids, one of the five, his body did turn up. It turned up in the River Laggan, and it had been dismembered. It had been beheaded, and a limb was missing. And it was in a sack, and they took this. It's a very fast-flowing, very big, spit like the Thames, a lag, and it's a powerful river. And they blamed Brian McDermott, who at the time, I think, was 8 years old. They blamed his 11, 12-year-old brother for doing it. So they had an argument about Brian's brother hitting Brian with a stick or something like that. So he decided, instead of giving his brother a bit of a beating, to dismember him, put him in a sack and throw him in the lake. An absolute load of crap. But the word on the street at the time when they found Brian's body was, it's witchcraft. That murder was witchcraft. So the British Army sent out the intelligence unit, and the guy that was involved in it was called Colin Wallace, and he was a senior officer, and it was a disinformation unit, and he was told to go out and set up mock satanic witchcraft sites all around the capital. He didn't even know what it was. He had to look it up in a book. But he was getting blood from butcher shops, drawing pentagrams and getting hold of a sheep and a rabbit and cutting bits off and making a mockery of these things to distract it away. But also what he did was it put fear in the Catholics about witchcraft. So it won on both fronts. But he made it clear to the British government, there's something about Brian McDermott's murder that isn't right. and there might be some substance in it. Colin Wallace was then stitched up for a murder he didn't commit, and he was a senior army officer. He did 10 years in Wandsworth and Wormer Scrubs prison before being released on an appeal. And if you want to watch a documentary, it's called The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Mm.
Now, a couple of years ago, a woman said to me, look, I know someone who's got some information.
Mm.
So I went and spoke with this person, or went and met with them, and they said, look, I've got to tell you that I know of a murder of a child back in the 1970s. My parents were involved in Satanism, and I was taken to a ritual, and if you're a child of a Satanist, you're going to survive, because you're going to be needed as a weapon to do the rituals.
Mm.
But if you're not, you're going to die. Anyone who's not, they're going to be sacrificed. And this person said, we'll put underneath a church, left there for 2 days in the dark. But they said there was a little boy there, and he'd been abducted, and he was in his underpants and his vest, and he'd wet himself and pooed himself. He was frightened. He was crying. And this person said, try to comfort him. But they killed him in the ritual. And they said, I watched the boy get his throat slit, and they cut off his left arm. And I said, right, this has got to go to the police. Everything people tell me, I take to the police.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my rules.
Right.
If it involves criminality, the police have got to be told. They'll do nothing, but they've got the right to do nothing. Yeah, they've got to be informed. And we must do everything in the parameters of the law. So I went to the, used to be the RUC, it's now the PSNI. I met with a journalist in Belfast who worked for the Belfast Telegraph, I think. I said, can you put me in touch with someone in the police there? I went, yeah. And the police rang me back. And they said, I believe you've got some information regarding Brian McDermott's murder. I went, well, yeah, I have potentially got a witness for you. But I'm going to say something. If this is wrong, it goes no further, right? But if it's right, then please tell me and we can move on. And I said, this person witnessed Brian have his left arm removed. And they went, carry on. So they never disclosed what limb was removed. It's his left arm. And the reason they moved the left arm, it's in Italian and Latin, left is sinister. It's the devil's side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the witchcraft does. It concentrates on the left side. Not, the heart beats out there. And these are little things that... Now, if we had an occult crimes unit, we could educate our police. Mm-hmm. We could say, look, when there's a body in an ecclesiastical grounds, there was a guy who murdered 3 men in East London. He murdered them in churchyards. Oh, come on now. There's something going on now with witchcraft.
Yeah, that's not normal.
But there's a reason, yeah. And we could educate the police and say, you've got to look that this could be witchcraft.
They don't take it seriously.
They're not interested. But the police force in Northern Ireland are taking it seriously. They ran me back and said, and they've opened the investigation. And God bless them for doing that.
Mm.
So, I wonder if any of the other UK forces would bother, because actually in Northern Ireland is still a fairly Christian part of the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're probably taking it more seriously than other forces,
Tony,
might.
This is so interesting. So I put a request out. Can someone do me an FOI, Freedom of Information, on how many cases have been satanic related in the UK? So a guy did it for me. He said, yeah, I'll do it for you. So he went putting this into every single police force in the United Kingdom. Said, have you had in the last 10 years, from 2010 to 2020, any cases involving Satanism? Right? The response was 400 across the board.
400?
But 10% were from Northern Ireland.
Mm.
But there was a woman called Dr. Joan Coleman, who was a leading psychiatrist and psychotherapist at the Maudsley Hospital in London, the leading mental health institution in London. And she compiled a list from her clients, the ones that had been severely sexually abused. She'd interview them, and she had the same findings as me, that 1 in 10 would say that they had been ritually abused. So she concentrated solely on that demographic, right? And if two or more people mentioned the same person, independent, she wrote it down to a journalistic standard. She compiled what's called the RAINS list, RAINS, Ritual Abuse Information Network Support. And she compiled this list. It's a who's who of satanic abusers. My old boss in the police is named on it.
Good Lord.
But there were three senior officers from three different police forces that were named on there. David and Powys in Wales, Hampshire, and the Metropolitan Police had higher-ranked officers named as active Satanists. When we got the Freedom of Information, only three forces said they didn't have any, and they were Diven and Powys, Hampshire, and the Met Police.
Oh,
and here's interesting, something Tony said earlier. The mainland ones that had the highest was Essex and Hertfordshire, and bizarrely enough, that was the main amount of witchcraft that Matthew Hopkins dealt with was in Essex and Hertfordshire. Yeah. And it was almost similar to
all those
findings.
Years ago.
So
if that's the case with the police, it makes you wonder what's going on within the intelligence services.
Right, exactly.
Doesn't it? I mean, if anyone has ever, never seen it, it's a terrific movie. Film was made, I think it was about 1972, called The Satanic Rites of Dracula, is a battle between the occult and people in the intelligence services going on in this film. It's actually a terrific yarn. And what happens is they're all sitting there investigating this, and they're saying, "Well, actually, there's that guy. He's in charge of my pension. What am I going to do now? If we investigate him, my pension's at threat." I think they're putting that in there as a bit of a joke. But what they're saying is, of course, is the senior civil servants were involved in this, whether it's through Freemasonry or otherwise. So their loyalty is to the cults; it's not to the public.
Well, one abuse case that I've been personally lending an ear to, somebody who's a survivor. She's still being harassed, and her finger was pointing at social services as well. She says she was part of her husband, had an entire paedophile ring. They were homosexual, LGBT related, but they were getting him to try and coerce her children to become part of that abuse network. She tried to protect them, and for pains, even the social services in that area turned on her.
The woman.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, that's just one, it's her case.
They were taken away from her, weren't they?
Yes. And then it's a case of, do you believe her entirely? Is there another narrative? Why would social services not take something like this serious? Why would children be taken from her rather than, and given to her, her husband?
I was given a list by a survivor.
Mm.
And it's actually the hierarchy of Satanism, like you were saying about the pyramid, and it actually is. And so at the bottom, you've got a rank called the Watchers. And they will watch in society. So they'll look for single parents, single mothers. They might work in doctors, and they'll pick out maybe a mother who's mentally ill, can't cope.
Vulnerable people.
Vulnerable people. And then it goes up to another lot, which would start being more proactive in getting the kids. And the next one up is arranging for children to be taken. They're called the Fixers.
I see.
Well, this is where Jimmy Fixit comes in. And these are people that will procure children for sex orgies. A bit like Fred West, a bit like Epstein. They're Fixers.
Yeah, they have a fixer.
And at the top, they're called the Bloods. And that will be the royalty, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
But they're called the Bloods at the top.
That's a kind of almost like an organized racket. And that's what it sounded like. She was describing an organized system. And then the problem is if our social services, our police services, and even probation, perhaps, if and the prisons, you'd have thought they would have had a collective understanding of kind of ritual abuse.
If you watch Richard Magley's documentary he did about the El Salvadorian prison the other day, I don't know if you saw it.
Didn't see that, no.
It was brilliant. It was good. I don't like the guy, but it was a good documentary. And the prisoners are all there, and they get them out, and they've got these tattoos. And the prison governor said they worship Satan. They are all active Satanists. And the biggest growing religion in South America is Santa Muerte, which is really taken over Mexico by storm. They're abandoning Catholicism and going into this.
They have the tattoos. I've seen their markers.
And he said these people worship Satan.
So this is an actual form of dark religion, if you like, and it's actually organised. There's money involved?
Criminality.
Mm.
So I've spoken to Jamaican gangsters who do obia.
Mm.
So before they go out and do some work, they will do a ritual. They'll be prayed over by an obia priest. And so it'll be for the priest, the police won't see them. There'll be an invisibility potion. So they'll get away from the police. Anyone comes up against them, that the case will collapse or that person will become sick. And years ago, we used to have a magazine called The Loot magazine. The Loot.
I remember, yeah. Maybe selling and buying and selling. Things there. Yes.
If you went in the back, in the personal section, they used to have, they'd have Mahamra bats for like the Sri Lankan community, and they'd have these spiritualist doctors for the Nigerian West Indian. And they would advertise, come to us, if there's a case you want to collapse, come to see me, if you want this. And they were voodoo doctors. They were dealing in darkness.
Yeah, I remember. Tony, if social services and these guys in police force aren't taking this really as seriously as perhaps they should, you'd have thought investigative journalists or mainstream media should be interested. What's the story there?
Well, because most of our elite institutions are now under their control. I think we're living in an age almost unprecedented. It's almost like going back to medieval times where there's a tiny elite running things, and that these networks of organised crime have infiltrated most of our elite institutions, even places like universities. Now, these people are not selected on merit to run these departments of university. Many of them are corporate funded. There was a brilliant guy at Keele University, Chris Exley, the world expert on aluminium. Only the people who were funding that university didn't like him because he was showing up the aluminium industry and criticising them, saying this is far too much of this. It's causing Alzheimer's in our food, in our, you know, sort of toxic world. And so he's removed, even though he's the world expert. So our universities are compromised by money. I think the way these people operate is they simply say, well, everyone's got their price. Well, John and I have not got our prize.
I'm wondering about the climate of the climate that creates this or protects it. And I'm thinking about even mainstream schools. So sex education has already been brought down to kids potentially 4, 5, 6 years old being taught. And then online, we've got that online world where kids have got access as well to all sorts of material. But there's this even children's television program. I've seen elements on Roblox, for instance, where there's been hints of grooming and manipulating of children. So again, if this is seeping into mainstream social media and internet culture, you know, I can evidence it further with New Ageist ideas. There's been a plethora of New Ageism that's burst out, which is legitimized on the net. Witches are almost now painted actually as benign mothers of nature, herbalists. You know, you get a lot of that promotion of the witches as being the good guys, and the oppression of women linked to witches as well is a big thing online. Is there a bit of a whitewashing going on there, do you think?
Well, no, not necessarily, because I think, I mean, I know witches personally, and many of them are absolutely dedicated to caring for the natural environment. But this is an outer portico of something more sinister.
So they're not
white
involved,
witchcraft and black witchcraft. You know, think of the Freemasonic checkerboard. I really ought to tip my hat to Sam Williamism, the channel on YouTube, who's done a tremendous amount in looking into the symbolism, occult symbolism. It's quite well known about Washington, D.C., but what about London? What about cities like Oxford? What about some of the main places, like, for example, the big Rothschild's Palace up in Buckinghamshire? These places he's been going around pointing out all these... Look, this is all their code written into the buildings. And, of course, this is where it comes back to Freemasonry. If you think about many of the big palaces built in this country, they were built round about the early 1700s. What had just happened? Well, we had an English Civil War, which was essentially a battle between the old feudal class and the new up-and-coming merchant classes. Cromwell represented the merchants, and they basically took over. So Parliament now is going to be run for the merchant classes, the capitalist class, no longer the landowners. And if you think about it, you know, there are two things which keep us in chains. One is our landlessness, so if you haven't got anywhere to call your own. The other is being broke, you know, so if you haven't got any money, you're doubly screwed. So those two aspects, the land and the money, were at battle during the Civil War. Still very important today. But so what then happened after the Civil War is Britain was run by Cromwell and his son. It was a military dictatorship. It was a disaster. So they had the restoration of Charles II, bringing back the same line in to run the country and everything. There was a what they called the Restoration. There were all sorts of fantastic comedies. It was almost like the 1960s, back in the 1650s. And everyone was having loads of fun in London. Suddenly, it was everyone was relaxed. The king's back. Everything's okay. But then they had the Glorious Revolution at the end of that century. And so a Dutch king was invited in by a treacherous parliament to then take over again. So what you had was he was actually the seal. King Billy was the seal on the Civil War and the takeover by the City of London and the merchant classes of this country. The king ever since, including our present king, I think, has, even though they make some very important appointments, they don't really have any very much say in what goes on. They just keep do what they're told to do by the city. And just my final point on this, the city, what is the City of London? It's a series of livery companies. Those livery companies, like the Freemasons, you have all sorts of different ones. The lightermen who used to run the boats up and down London. All these industries pretty much have gone from Britain, but those livery companies remain. And they, I think, are a part of the heart of the capitalist City of London, the criminal elite that now run this country, really through policy, etc., through putting policy into to Westminster. They're far more powerful, it seems to me, the city, the Guildhall, etc., than any of our political parties, or, to come back to where you started, the journalists. They own these elite institutions now.
So the thing is, that makes me connect things like Kabbalah, because I know one of the key financiers, probably the key financier of that invasion of Britain, was a Jewish merchant linked to Spain, but actually in Holland. Funnily enough, they were expelled, that family, from Spain during the Inquisition, and then they set up in Holland. And there was a massive investment in the Armada that was put together for William when he came over, and then they took over. So I'm with that whole business. But you see, then things like Kabbalah, these are other occult movements which still exist.
Yep.
And of course, ritualism and the likes of Madonna these days.
Well, Oxford's got a Kabbalist society.
It has?
Oxford University.
And those are very suspicious. I'm wondering whether a lot of this kind of ritual abuse, this kind of sacrifice business, etc., is coming from the top. Because again, I have to bring back Andrew, and you have to bring back the whole royal family connection to Epstein. Of course, that's been a big issue. And this is probably my final point, that the cover-ups that you're talking about, it shocks me that the British intelligence service wouldn't know.
Of course, they know. I mean, they've got their eye on everything. I had a MI6 agent spoke to me at length once about how they would go around to all the spiritualist churches.
Right.
So the spiritualist movement sprung up after the First World War because people turned about in Christianity, because women lost all their husbands, and how could God allow this? And it's a bit like a survivor of sexual abuse. How can God allow this? And it turns them away from God. You know, a lot of this is to take people away from Christianity and move them away from it.
So a lot of the priesthood that was implicated, say, in Ireland with child abuse or in the world, it's possible that these people who are brought into the church could also be, you know, part of some sort of other cult.
And of course, but it's perversion, isn't it? But when they did have a purge in Southern Ireland, what did they do with the priests? They sent them over to the east coast of America. 80% of the priests that they exported that were accused of paedophilia, 80% of them went on to sexually abuse.
Wow.
In the east coast, you know? So you had all that.
That would discredit Christianity. If you link the church the way they did, it discredits, would drive people. In Ireland, it has driven people away.
And then if the ritual abuse goes on, not just the ritual abuse by a priest in a church, you're never going to set foot in that church again.
No.
A lot of people that come to me, they're of the new age atheistic, right? Because they think God abandoned them.
Right.
Now, a guy called me up, and I had to laugh, and he said, "John, I'm a real big fan of what you're doing. I support you. And I come under immense attack by two big media publications when I started speaking about ritual abuse. They said that I was perpetuating the resurgence of the satanic panic that swept through during the 80s and which caused a lot of children maybe to unnecessarily go in care and bigger argument, but that's what they claim anyway, and accused me of this satanic panic nonsense. And this guy said, we're going to we're going to be holding a witch's moat for you. He said, I'm an active Satanist. And I was sexually abused by a satanic cult as a kid. He said, but he was an atheistic Satanist, right? He said, he is the God, not a Luciferian one. So there's this division. So he said, right, we like you. We want you to carry on. So we're going to curse all those that come against you. I said, well, listen, I'm a Christian. Thanks for the sentiment, but I can't allow it. And I said to him, can you tell me why you was abused in Satanism, why you've gone back to Satanism? And it was very simple. He said, revenge. He said, what does God do for us victims? I go to Satan, I get revenge straight away. I want revenge. Because the law's not giving us revenge. The law's failing us. One thing survivors need in order to heal, they need justice. They need justice, and you don't get justice, not for child abuse. We haven't, you know, imagine not having even an occult crimes unit when Saudi Arabia's got one, Italy's got one.
And there's no care for them, there's no place for them to feel like they're heard.
When I was whistleblowing, I had the support of the Minister for Policing and Crime. He said, I'm right behind you. A guy called Mike Penning, a right honourable. And he was brought up in a kid's home, joined the British Army. I think he was a fireman, then he became an MP. Quite a tough guy, knows the reality of child abuse, Minister for Policing, and he's going to help me. He said, I'm with you all the way, John. So I said, brilliant, right. We needed a meeting in Parliament. So, and we needed a very, very senior member of the City of London Police. He went, no, go, John. I can get you the Commissioner of the Met Police here. I can't go. I said, what are you on about? You're the Minister of Policing. He said, not for the City of London. He said, they are not answerable to the Crown.
No, yep.
They have nothing to do.
Doesn't the King and Queen have to ask permission to go and to the city?
Their livery is, it's not silver, it's gold. And it's because it's got the King, it's called the King Edward's Coronet.
Mm.
And you get that in the police forces in Jamaica, in used to have it in Nigeria, the colonies have still got the coronet. Not them. They have two phoenix.
So what are you fighting for now, John? And what do you think, Tony, should happen? What should we be ideally doing?
Well, I totally agree with John. We do need to have in this country a proper occult investigation service funded from the taxpayer. Because after all, this is the taxpayers. But it should start its work, I think, in the Home Office. The Home Office has been at the heart of many of these scandals in the past, cover-ups, etc., through the VIP to file scandal, where we had that wonderful woman come over from New Zealand to head the...
Alexis J, was it?
Well, no, she was from New Zealand. She was someone different. So she was here for 2 months trying to get that investigation started, and then she had to leave. She said, the Home Office insists on appointing all my staff. So the Home Office is the first place, I think, to get rid of anybody who's, you know, indebted or connected to any of these groups. In fact, I think there was a Met inquiry that said that within the Metropolitan Police and within the Home Office, there was a network, a Masonic network, who would warn Freemasons, their friends, every time that the police were starting to investigate them. And stuff would disappear off their computer system.
Well, you had, in the independent inquiry that went on for 8 years, cost 200 million quid, with 20 recommendations, not one got implemented. I was a core participant on it.
Mm.
One of the MPs that was consistently mentioned was Leon Britton.
Yeah.
Leon Britton, he was a Home Secretary.
Mm.
Geoffrey Dickens took in files, not just of child abuse, but also satanic ritual abuse.
But Britton was involved himself.
Wait, no, exactly. And again, what happened to him? They moved him over to Northern Ireland.
He was a European commissioner.
And
he was made a commissioner in the EU.
Yeah, the youngest ever appointed Home Secretary as well.
And he died before the investigations on his cases.
And his wife went and sued someone who tried to besmirch his name.
So you were in Parliament today.
Yeah.
And you didn't get to speak.
No.
But there was supposed to be something on ritual abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet again, it seems like you were sidelined.
Yeah, it was a lobbyist group called the National Working Group that are trying to get ritual abuse seen as a crime, as it were. But what they were focusing on was overzealous West African Christian groups that sort of do exorcisms and deliverance on a child who wets a bed.
Mm.
You know, they really are looking at the speck of dust, sawdust in someone's
eye. Missing the plank.
Yeah, they really are. And then they were going on about rabbis that were
doing circumcisions and infecting penises.
They sound like gatekeepers to me. Exactly. They're setting themselves up. Come to us, we'll help you. And then you get absolutely nowhere with them.
I'm going to say something very controversial now. The guy running, I'm not going to be smoking, but he's a homosexual guy, and he clearly has a problem with Christianity because as a young kid, he said that his parents always, in a family, tried to pray out the gay. So you're never really going to get that committed Christian approach to dealing with the demonic.
It's got a prejudice there
You're right. They're picking low-hanging fruit. Is my answer to that.
You'd have thought the likes of the Church of England or any moral or virtuous kind of orientated, you know, traditional values organisations, Muslim or otherwise, these faith communities, they should get involved
They should all get involved.
Well, I think the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church have got a more mature approach to these sorts of cults. Mm. For centuries, the Catholics had totally banned any Catholics from joining Freemasonry. It's all very much more relaxed nowadays, but they've got, a deeper faith background. I mean, if you go back, if you really want to do this, go back in time, the Protestant King Billy we were talking about, this is the latest version, which I think has been very corrupted, allowing Freemasons in. Of course, what do you think you're doing? A secret society cult into your church? What are you playing at? The Catholics before that, of course, they had the Jesuits. They were set up by the Roman Emperor Constantine in order to control the Christians back in, 300 and something AD? Mm-hmm. Because the Roman emperors were failing to put down Christianity. They were burning Christians at a rate of knots, and it was failing. They were even lighting the way into Rome with burning Christians, and it still wasn't getting rid of Christianity. More people were joining. It's a little bit like, say, the Israelis saying they're trying to get rid of Hamas by killing loads of people in Gaza. What happens is loads more people join the militant organisation. The same in Northern Ireland. People were joining the IRA because they could see the injustice of what the British government was doing, supporting the loyalists in Northern Ireland, etc. So, you know, I think this idea of creating an investigation unit is a very good one. But I think people also need to know how, I think, to defend yourselves against the occult. Actually, this is a whole dimension to life which is taboo. The mainstream press never mention it except to just, ridicule it, maybe?
Yeah,
they
mock it. Yeah, they mock it, and they mock me. They call me a Christian fundamentalist. There was a documentary came out 6 months ago, Channel 4 did, about Bishop John Smythe. Mm. This guy went on to brutalise a kid who ended up dying. But he was the youngest ever promoted QC barrister. He then went on to represent the church in Christian issues, a very charismatic guy, just a massively broken individual. And he was identifying young Christian boys from high fee paying schools that were vulnerable. And then he was then getting them into his inner sanctum. And it was basically to make leaders, Christian leaders, to go out into the world, strong Christian leaders. But he was beating the daylights out of them, caning them, to a point where they end up permanent injuries and mentally scarred. And Justin Welby failed to do anything about it. And they found out that Justin Welby was part of this inner sanctum group that was used at this Christian militia that had gone through the beatings and the buggery himself. So it goes, those that are put in to adjudicate, what they should do psychometric testing on these people, and that will weed it out. They should do polygraph testing on them and high-level vetting that they have no paedophilic tendency or no connection to occultic practices. And it can be done.
Thank you very much, Tony Gosling. Thank you.
We finish, can I just say one thing? Because Roger Cook has just died last week.
Yeah, bless him. Yeah.
Roger was a Kiwi, fantastic guy. I had a great pleasure to interview him about 13 years ago. I think it was around about 2012 or so. But Roger had made many programs that really no one else has come close to.
Yeah.
One of them was exposing the sale on the black market of ex-Soviet nuclear weapons and weapons-grade plutonium. No one ever mentioned that ever since, I think, from the Cook Report. Smuggling these bombs, pretend bombs, onto aircraft a year before the 9/11 attacks at Boston Airport.
Snuff films as well.
Yeah, he did a whole thing on snuff movies. Yeah. But one of his, I think, best was it's called The Devil's Work.
Yeah.
And he discovered up in Leeds, there was an organisation there that was selling all of the accoutrements of Satanism, the daggers, knives, all these sorts of things. And it's only really come to light, and the penny dropped with me since, after Jimmy Savile. Oh, he was in Leeds, wasn't he? How peculiar. Yeah. So I think it'd be nice to sort of end with a tipping the hat to someone like Roger Cook, who did such an amazing job in the world of real television before the stuff we have today.
We need amazing the Roger Cooks of the world. And I guess what Tony Gosling does and what John Wedger do is kind of that sort of work. And you know, on Deep Dive Perspective, we do give platforms to people who are suppressed on mainstream television. And how can you really tolerate the idea that we don't have an investigation unit that looks at the occult, looks at these issues which involve ritual sacrifices of children, murder, essentially, and recruitment and abuse of kids, abuse of adults, within these covens? I mean, surely you'd have thought that's what we pay the police for, that's what we pay our intelligence services for, but it seems as though there's a blockage. There needs to be a campaign that backs John Wedger. Do go and check out his websites. Where can we find you, John, these days?
Yeah, I've got a website, but I don't really do much with it.
No.
But they can email me, jonwedgerfoundation@gmail.com. I've got loads on YouTube, loads. I've just written a book. Called Ironic. I'm just waiting for that to be published. So I'm out there. Someone said to me, be like a submarine. Come up, do a bit, then go under. I've been under for a while. I'm coming back up again. Yeah.
And Tony, where can we find you?
Well, I do a weekly podcast live every Friday in Bristol from 5 till about 8:30. We look at everything, whatever is in the news that week. I mean, one of the things we must mention is Peter Thiel and his rather strange cult around technology, which Elon Musk is a part of.
There was a big gathering that was exposed just last week.
That's right. Well, Wired magazine did a fantastic expose. Peter Thiel has got his own little cult, personal mates, including some of the bosses of the military arm of NATO that come along to his little gathering. So there is some very good journalism out there, but you do have to go and look hard for it. So I keep doing my broadcast journalism, which is what I was taught to do by the BBC back in 1989-1990. They did a very good job teaching me here in London. So and I knew I was being pushed out because I was starting to ruffle feathers. So I've carried on doing it almost ever since. I've been involved in land rights campaigning, squatting, that sort of thing as well in the meantime. But you can find me at thisweek.org.uk, and we do a live stream every Friday evening, 5 o'clock.
LBC Radio did a fantastic bit of real sort of out there proactive journalism. They went and followed up claims I made that there was a police officer involved in pimping out kids. They actually found him, tracked him down and doorstepped him. Check out the work of Andy Hughes and LBC.
Well,
we put everything towards the IOPC, not investigating it.
Well, there you are. That's where you can find the gentleman doing some great work. Join in. You can't really ignore this kind of thing if it's going on under our noses, in our local churches, across secret covens. It's the first time I've done a deep dive into this. And I guess all I can say is do like, share, subscribe on the Deep Dive Perspective, because this is the kind of show that you won't see in very many other podcasts. And I think we need your support. These guys need your support. We can't just pass it by. You know, back up the people who are bringing you the real news, and bust these organisations which are really preying on the vulnerable around the country and beyond. That's our moral duty. Thank you for watching this edition of the Deep Dive Perspective. Goodbye.